Thanks everyone for the opportunity to come here and tell you guys about this work. So I'll be talking about Kinder Dark Matter, but really more broadly, this talk will be about new pathways to the relic abundance of vector portal dark matter. And I'll talk about this kinetically decoupling relic mechanism among these new pathways, so we can walk away with kind of one concrete example of one of these new pathways. And so this is from work with Hongwan Liu, Tracy Slatyer, and Yudai Sai. Okay, so let me start by asking, why is it interesting to think about light thermal dark matter? So there have been many suggestions for new physics and new particles that might solve the dark matter puzzle. And among these, one kind of important and for a long time now very well studied class has been the weakly interacting massive particles. And so these are a general dark matter candidate with masses in the GeV to TeV's range, and with weak scale interactions with the standard model. And they're the simplest example of a thermal relic. So these are particles that were once in thermal equilibrium with the standard model plasma and subsequently freeze out to the constant co-living density we observe as the universe expands and cools. And the WIMPs are theoretically attractive because they arise naturally in various beyond standard model theories, most notably in models of supersymmetry. And also because of the observation that the thermal production of WIMPs through their 2-to-2 annihilations to the standard model, like this diagram I'm showing here at the top, with a weak scale cross section, naturally gives rise to the observed relic density of the dark matter. And so this is referred to as the WIMP miracle. But so now the WIMPs have kind of for a long time now been, a really well-studied class of dark matter candidate. And there's also been increasingly strong experimental constraints being placed on new physics at the weak scale. And so we're also inclined to think about what kinds of alternative thermal production mechanisms might exist for the dark matter. And in particular, current direct detection constraints have their greatest sensitivity to dark matter with masses around 10 GeV and greater, and they quickly become insensitive to dark matter at lower masses. And so in particular, we're inclined to think about what kinds of alternative thermal production mechanisms might naturally give rise to light dark matter, might naturally populate this sub-GeV region for the dark matter. And it's also a particularly exciting time to think about light dark matter, because there's kind of a growing frontier of new experiments becoming available and being planned that will soon explore the parameter space of light dark matter with unprecedented sensitivity. And so here I'm showing kind of a list of some of the previous light thermal relics that have been studied. And today what I want to do is really carefully explore an already, well-studied hidden sector model, the vector portal dark matter model, and in doing so, find a rich set of new pathways to the relic abundance of vector portal dark matter. And among these new pathways, I want to describe in a bit of detail this kinetically decoupling relic or Kinder mechanism. So here's an outline of how I'd like the rest of the talk to go. So I want to start by describing some of these previous light thermal relics that have been studied, in particular the SIMP and ELDR scenarios. And there's kind of an important lesson that I want to take from the SIMP and ELDR scenarios and moving forward to thinking about this vector portal dark matter model in the rest of the talk. And so then I'll move into thinking about the vector portal dark matter model. And in that context, first describe some more of the previous light thermal relics that have been studied in this context, in particular the forbidden and not forbidden dark matter models. And then I want to think about new pathways to the relic abundance of vector portal dark matter. And in particular, among these new pathways, describe this kinetically decoupling relic or Kinder mechanism. So I want to think about Kinder by first outlining the thermal history of a specific realization of Kinder. And then I want to point to where Kinder lies in the parameter space of this vector portal dark matter model. And in doing so, we'll also see where it lies in relation to some of these other new freeze-out regimes we find in this model, and then go on to describing the experimental constraints. So let's start by thinking about reviewing some of these previous light thermal relics and starting with this strongly interacting massive particle, this thermal SIMP scenario. So in the thermal SIMP scenario, it's self-annihilations among dark matter particles which determine the relic density of the dark matter. And so in this scenario, imagine that at once in the thermal history of the universe, this 3-2 self-annihilation among dark matter particles is active and maintains chemical equilibrium in the dark sector. And at the same time, this elastic scattering process between dark and standard model particles is active and maintains thermal equilibrium between the dark and standard model sectors. And as the universe expands and cools, the dark matter depletes through these 3-2 self-annihilations up until the point at which the rate for these 3-2 self-annihilations falls below the Hubble expansion rate, and this signals the freeze out of the dark matter. And just as a note, throughout the talk, I'll draw a square over a process to indicate when that process is frozen out. But so now we can solve this freeze out condition. This thermal average cross section of this 3-2 process scales this way with the dark sector coupling in mass. Just by dimensional analysis, we can see this. And because freeze out happens during the radiation dominated era, the Hubble rate scales like temperature squared. We can solve this for this relation among the dark matter mass and coupling, which when we match to the observed relic density of the dark matter, naturally gives rise to dark matter of around 100 MeV and strong coupling. And so this natural emergence of the strong scale in the thermal simp scenario kind of makes it is an attractive feature of this framework and is referred to as a simp miracle in analogy with the Wundt miracle.
Sorry, one simple question. So this is assuming that the temperature of the dark sector is the same as the standard model?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what this elastic scattering process provides.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, but so thanks for that question, because now we'll see what happens when we relax this assumption of thermal equilibrium and thinking about this Elder scenario. So now let's think about this elastically decoupling relic scenario. So in both the thermal WIMP and SIMP scenarios, it's processes which change the number of dark matter particles that determine the relic density of the dark matter. But remarkably, it's also possible to realize a scenario where it's the elastic scattering process shown here between dark and standard model particles which can determine the relic density of the dark matter. And so that's this elastically decoupling relic scenario. So in the Elder scenario, again, imagine that this elastic scattering process is active and at first maintains thermal equilibrium between the dark and standard model sectors.
Sorry, can I ask a very naive question? Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Hi. In this 3-2, remind me, what type of UV completions are you imagining that do this and do not make the dark matter decay? And everything is under control. So the 3-2 process, because it looks like one part of dark matter particle disappears. So what set of symmetries ensure that this?
Yeah, you know, I actually don't have in my memory the specific models that are used to realize this.
I mean, do you have the general idea what ensures that this gives you a stable dark matter candidate? Or stable enough?
No, I guess I kind of can't answer that right now. I don't have that picture. I know that in the original model they rely on a Z3 symmetry to do this, but I can't remember the details of how it's realized.
Okay. I mean, just for the information of, like, I guess your or the rest, it's just a simple singlet does it, right? A singlet with a C2, you have 3-2 interactions because you can draw a three-level diagram.
That's okay. Why can't I close the loop of the other two dark matter particles and have the dark matter decay to some standard model stuff? I mean, can
not,
I
not in the C2 singlet?
I mean, if it's a singlet, it's a singlet. So then there is no. It has a mass, so I can close the loop, add the standard model diagram on the left, and then I have a dark matter decay to four standard model particles. And it's pretty heavy, so there is phase space. Like, these couplings are large, these couplings are not small.
Right.
Oh yeah, with the standard model process, yeah, that's a bit harder, right?
Anyway, carry on.
Yeah,
I'm sure there is an answer to this because
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'll review this. I'll review these. I'll review this again and get back to you about that.
Yeah, thank you. It's okay.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the question. Okay. Let's see. So at early times in this elder scenario, this elastic scattering process maintains thermal equilibrium between the two sectors, and the 3-2 self-annihilations maintain the dark sector in chemical equilibrium. And so this in the beginning is the same as in the thermal simp scenario. Except in this case, as the universe expands and cools, the dark matter decouples through this elastic scattering process. So it's this elastic scattering process now, which is the first to decouple. And this happens when the rate at which the elastic scattering transfers energy between the dark and standard model sectors falls below the rate at which these 3-2 self-annihilations convert mass to kinetic energy in the dark sector. And so when this happens, the two sectors elastically decouple. They're not thermally secluded, and the dark sector evolves with its own separate temperature T prime, which is different from the standard model temperature T.
Sorry, just to go back to the original question. So again, a singlet with a C2 is perfectly fine, right? So it's S squared, Higgs squared. That has a C2 symmetry that protects the singlet from decaying. And then on the right, so that for instance will give you the diagram on the left.
But then the question is, do you have the diagram on the right? That's not the
symmetry. Yes, because if you have a singlet with a quartic, you have three singlets coming in. So let me put my video.
Oh, and one coming out. It's not
three
two.
Singlets coming in, then just three level and then two coming out, right?
Sorry, if it's four, right? It's four in the quartic.
Yes.
I'm confused. So then this is five. It's clearly not.
And it's both the Higgs and the singlet have a symmetry break, and then you have also trilinear terms and so on, right?
No, but the trilinear breaks the C2.
Right? Yeah, I'm saying that breaks the C2, and this has to be a large cross section. This is not a small cross section.
Yeah, let me remember what's the diagram because I just give me a second.
Yeah, but let's continue because we shouldn't sidetrack the talk.
Yeah.
We can discuss this at the end.
Yeah, now I'm distracted by it too.
Sorry, continue your talk. I mean,
I
want to believe. I'm not familiar with this literature. I want to believe that people have an answer to this question.
Yeah. So for the singlet model, it's 4-2. It's not 3-2. That's the answer.
Oh,
so it's just schematic, the diagram on the right.
Okay.
That is your number changing stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So there is always some sort of symmetry that can protect some. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. We can revisit it in the end. We can pull up the original paper in the end and see what they say about it.
Yeah, but let's continue this in the end because I didn't want to sidetrack the talk. Let's continue.
Okay. Right, so after elastic decoupling happens, the two sectors are thermally secluded, and this happens. So this happens while the 3-2 self-annihilations are still active, and in particular, they're still actively converting mass to kinetic energy in the dark sector and heating it up. Yeah, the dark sector is not thermally secluded, so they're heating it up in a process called cannibalization, which I'll describe in a couple slides. But the important thing to see here about cannibalization is that during this period, the dark matter evolves with a nearly constant temperature and co-moving density. So that finally when the 3-2 process freezes out, and this signals the freeze out of the dark matter, because the dark sector has been evolving with a nearly constant co-moving density, the relic abundance is nevertheless set by this elastic decoupling process. So now let's look at this cannibalization process.
Sorry, I have another question. So if the standard model is not created by, if this sector is not created by the standard model, what created the sector?
I guess, I mean, maybe I'm not appreciating your question, but I think that we're just, so far we're just positing that this sector exists and that at some point it's in thermal equilibrium with the standard model.
I think in thermal equilibrium, you produce it through the standard model. That's fine. The standard model does the production. So as long as the standard model is reheated, the sector will be reheated too. But if only the standard model is reheated, where did these particles come from?
If only this, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to answer that. I guess I don't. Maybe I'm not appreciating the question.
I mean, part of the reason of the Wimp miracle is that you have a particle that was in thermal equilibrium with the standard model. So when the interaction is frozen out and the two sectors decouple, you have some leftover abundance that matches the measured abundance. Right. So you know where the sector came from. It came from the same source essentially that we came from. Here you're decoupling the two temperatures, so that sector is not in thermal equilibrium with the standard model. So it begs to answer the question, what created this sector? To begin with.
Well, can there be this 2 to 4 processes or 2 to 3? I mean, the other way around. So if there is a small, some seed population of the dark matter sector, then it will be populated. Yeah,
just because it may be populated. There's going to be some freezing abundance. I just don't see here in the conversation how that's fit in, because that constraints, depending on the couplings, constrains how much abundance in the dark sector you have. So it changes the discussion here.
Yeah, well, that is just the requirement that these processes, number changing processes, they are efficient at high enough temperature. Yes, so that's the constraint that must be there somewhere. I agree. But
I just want to understand how everything fits in. That's the question, Sergei.
Yeah. I agree. Yes. That there are some constraints from there.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying I want to see how the pieces. What is the how am I supposed to imagine this? Is it the fact that it's not in thermal equilibrium? Does this assume that the sector was always there? Is there some freezing contribution? What's the story about? Where did the hidden sector come from?
Mm-hmm. No, at high temperatures as I got, it is at thermal equilibrium.
It is. I missed that.
At high temperatures.
Yeah, maybe I'm not explaining this. That might also explain why I'm confused. So the scenario, right, is that at high enough temperatures, the dark sector is in thermal equilibrium with the standard model.
Okay.
Sorry,
I just got confused from this slide.
One moment. Let me try to say this again in a quick summary. So at early times, the two sectors are in thermal equilibrium. So the dark sector, this dark sector, which like whose number changing processes are dominated by this 3-2 process, is in thermal equilibrium with the standard model bath through the elastic scattering process. And so.
Yeah, but sorry, in order to create the sector, you need chemical equilibrium.
Yeah, and so chemical equilibrium within the dark sector is maintained by the 3-2 process.
No, but with the standard model. So having just kinetic equilibrium does not ensure that you have, I mean, you may have something that follows an energy distribution, but the total abundance does not match. When you have thermal equilibrium with the standard model, it means in the early universe, the temperature of the dark sector is not just that the temperature of the standard model, which is kinetic equilibrium. You also have a certain populated dark sector. So you have G star, I mean, there is a contribution of that sector to the entropy of the standard model.
Right.
I just want to understand the full history
These are good questions. They're forcing me to think about this carefully. I mean, I think. I guess I don't know what special role. I guess it seems to me that like chemical equilibrium through a process that involving both dark and standard model particles is maybe not critical in realizing this. In realizing a thermal scenario that matches the observed relic density, right? Like I guess, So long as the dark sector is in chemical equilibrium, the way in which it depletes follows it, like it's, you know, the number densities follow their equilibrium distributions, and those are kind of as so long as they're in thermal equilibrium with the standard model, then those are kind of universal functions of the standard model temperature, or like the temperature that they share. And
I mean, you understand why this is not clear, right? Because this is particle conserving numbers. So let's imagine, I mean, I could imagine that I have a sector that follows the temperature of the standard model. So for example, it's relativistic, but it doesn't necessarily carry the same energy density. This is the part that I'm confused about. But look, why don't you continue? Because we can come back to this in the end. I think I'm derailing the talk. So sorry.
No, okay, it's okay. Yeah, no, it's good. It's good for me to think about these things carefully. I guess I kind of glanced over this we can come back to this and think about this more carefully. But yeah,
let's come back to this to the end. Let's assume. Yeah.
I'll just quickly summarize. Yeah, the kind of rough picture. Yeah, the picture I'm trying to say here is that it's the thermal decoupling that determines the relic density. I'll move on to thinking about how that's done through this cannibalization scenario. Right, so now let's think about this cannibalization scenario. Yeah, to better understand how it leads to this elder scenario, and also because cannibalization will come up again in the context of this kinder scenario that I'll present. So cannibalization occurs after kinetic decoupling of the two sectors. And since they're kinetically decoupled, they're evolving thermally secluded from each other, and they can no longer transfer entropy with each other. And so the dark sector evolves with a constant commoving entropy density. And at the same time, these still active 3-2 self-annihilations maintain chemical equilibrium in the dark sector and at zero chemical potential. And so both of these facts can be used to determine the relation between the dark sector temperature T prime and the standard model temperature T. You find that T prime scales logarithmically with the standard model temperature and is mostly fixed by the kinetic decoupling temperature TD. And so this quantifies this statement that the dark sector evolves with nearly constant temperature during cannibalization. In fact, T prime scales like log T. And so in effect, these 3-2 self-annihilations are heating the thermally secluded dark sector and causing it to evolve with a nearly constant temperature and co-moving density. And so a way of saying this is during cannibalization, as the universe expands, a thermally secluded dark sector will cannibalize itself to keep warm. And so now we can directly see how this leads to the elder scenario by directly calculating the relic density of the dark matter. Upon the freeze out of this 3-2 of this 3-2 process. So the relic density is given by this equation. In particular, it scales exponentially with the inverse dark sector temperature freeze out TF prime. But because freeze out occurs at the end of a period of cannibalization, during which the dark sector temperature scales logarithmically with the standard model temperature and is mostly fixed by the kinetic decoupling temperature, this leads to the relic density being exponentially sensitive to the kinetic decoupling temperature TD, and having only logarithmic, subleading logarithmic dependence on the standard model temperature during cannibalization. And so this leads to the scenario that the relic density is mostly set by the elastic decoupling process. And so that's this elder scenario, and this is also a natural way to give rise to light sub GeV dark matter. So before moving into this dark photon model, there's a lesson that I want to pull from, just a quick note I want to make about thinking about the thermal simp and elder scenarios. And that's just to say that we saw in moving from simp to elder that in relaxing this assumption of thermal equilibrium, you can realize a novel freeze-out mechanism that naturally gives rise to light dark matter. And so it's this relaxation of the assumption of thermal equilibrium that I want to think about later on in the context of this dark photon model. So now I'll think about this dark photon model. And it's in the context of this model that I'll present new pathways to the relic abundance of dark matter, of vector portal dark matter. So this dark photon model we're considering is a Dirac fermion dark matter particle chi that's charged under a hidden U1 gauge symmetry with dark coupling alpha G, and with a dark gauge boson A prime that has a mass M A prime. And the dark photon provides a portal to the standard model through the kinetic mixing with the standard model photon through this term that's outlined in blue. It's controlled by the strength of this kinetic mixing parameter epsilon. And so written in the mass basis, like in the equation at top here, the kinetic mixing
generator. Excuse me, can you go to the previous slide?
Yeah.
I just want to kind of contemplate a bit more this exponential formula. So
yeah.
Shall we? So here, the dark matter abundance, the finite dark matter abundance is exponentially sensitive to the parameters. Should we think of it as a fine-tuning problem or not? Because it means that, I mean, a bit off, you would get much more dark matter than baryons, yeah? Or other way around, you will get too little dark matter. Yeah, isn't it introducing a fine-tuning problem, this scenario?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, maybe another question is asked. Another question is like, how robust is, yeah, how robust is, yeah, another way to say it is, how robust is the, is matching the relative density to varying like the strength of the kinetic decoupling?
Yeah, or because it's a miracle that basically automatically we get, almost automatically, naturally, we get abundance, which is of the same order, baryons and dark matter. And here we have exponential sensitivity to the parameters. So it looks like we need tuning to get matching abundances. Yeah.
Let me
just comment. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't question the formula. I think the formula is correct, but just looks like it's.
I see what you mean. I guess in a sense that's true. I guess yeah. It's like Elder implies, yeah, the region of Elder which matches the relic abundance implies kind of a region in the parameter space of the kinetic mixing, yeah, the kinetic mixing parameter and the strength of the 3-2 process. Yeah, so there's some region of parameter space in like epsilon versus alpha that will match the observed relic abundance. And I think... I actually think it is somewhat sensitive to varying those parameters. So it's not as robust in that sense, it's not as robust as the WIMP scenario. I think that's true. I would want to, in the case of Elder, I would want to go back and check to make sure it's true, but that's what I think and it's kind of, yeah.
Well, that's what seems to be implied by the result, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that observation. Okay. Okay. So yeah. So let's go back to thinking about this dark photon model. Right. So in the mass spaces, the kinetic mixing generates this coupling between the dark photon and the standard model electromagnetic current that's controlled by the strength of this kinetic mixing parameter epsilon. So the kinetic mixing generates these interactions between dark and standard model particles that I'm outlining in blue here. And I'm denoting standard model fermions by F. So we have elastic scattering between dark and standard model particles. We have chi annihilations to the standard model, and we have A prime decays to the standard model, all controlled by the strength of this kinetic mixing parameter. And I also want to focus on the region of this dark photon model in which the dark photon is more massive than the chi, but not so massive, it's less than twice the chi mass. And so in particular, this prevents the decays of A prime to chi bar. And so in this region, this is restricting us to the region in which the dominant number changing processes among dark sector particles are these 2-2 annihilations of chi's to A primes, and this 3-2 process of chi bar chi going into chi A prime. And so, yeah. Before moving on, I want to think about what regions we're leaving out by making this choice for the mass range of m A prime to m chi. And so, in the region that we're leaving out, where it's the chi that's heavier than the A prime, then the dominant process controlling the freeze out of the dark matter is these chi annihilations to A primes, which which inject energy into the standard model plasma and cause ionizations and heating, and run into deadly constraints for light dark matter. In this model. And so this is ruled out by CMB constraints for dark matter that's less than around a GeV for this parameter region of this model. And in the opposite region of the parameter space, of the mass range that we're leaving out, where the A prime is heavier than twice the chi mass, then this just reduces back to the WIMP case. Because in that case, this 2-to-2 process of chi's annihilating into A primes receives a huge kinematic suppression. It's no longer important. The 3-to-2 process of chi's going into chi A primes, going into chi A prime, reduces to a scattering process among the chi's as the A prime promptly decays to chi chi bar. And the dominant process controlling thermal freeze out is this chi annihilations to standard model, which likewise runs into stringent CMB constraints for light dark matter in this parameter region of the model. Okay, so let's think about in detail these two dominant number changing processes in the mass range of the model that we're interested in, starting with this process at the top left. So this 2-to-2 process of chi's annihilating into A primes receives a kinematic suppression from the chi's annihilating into the heavier A primes. But nevertheless, this process can proceed at finite temperature. And the scenario in which it's this process that determines the relative density of the dark matter has been previously realized in this so-called forbidden dark matter framework. And what's found is that when it's this process controlling the relative density, the relic density receives this exponential enhancement by the same kinematic factor, which when you match to the observed relic density naturally gives rise to dark matter that's exponentially lighter than the weak scale. So this is an actual way to give light sub GV dark matter in this model. And now let's think about this 3-to-2 process here at the right. So in the upper half of the mass range that we're considering, where the mass of A prime is greater than 3/2 the chi mass, then the large kinematic suppression of the 2-to-2 process can be compensated for by this 3-to-2 process, which can then dominate in setting the relic density of the dark matter in this region. And so the scenario in which it's this 3-to-2 process that sets the relic density of the dark matter has been previously studied in the so-called not forbidden dark matter framework. And so this is also a natural way to give light sub GV dark matter. But now, in both the forbidden and not forbidden dark matter scenarios, the explicit assumption is made that the two sectors remain thermally coupled throughout the freeze-out process. And so now I want to use that lesson that I mentioned in the context of Simp and Elder and relax this assumption of thermal equilibrium. And so consider scenarios in which this kinetic mixing parameter epsilon is small but non-zero, such that the two sectors are allowed to kinetically decouple during the freeze-out process, such that the dark sector evolves with its own separate temperature, T prime. And in doing so, I'll find a rich set of new pathways to the relic abundance of vector portal dark matter. And so this is really the kind of the first fully careful treatment of the kind of freeze-out regimes that can exist in this dark photon model, including the region of parameter space in which the two sectors are allowed to thermally decouple. And among these new pathways, I want to highlight in a bit of detail this kinetically decoupling relic or Kinder scenario. So I want to describe this Kinder scenario by first outlining the thermal history of a specific realization of Kinder. So this slide is a bit dense, but I'll use this slide as kind of a summary of the thermal history that I'll describe in the slides that follow. So let's look at a specific realization of Kinder in which the thermal coupling of the two sectors is controlled by the A prime standard model decays, shown here at the top. And let's also look at the specific case in which among the two dominant, among the two kind of the dark sector number changing processes, the 3-to-2 process dominates over the 2-to-2 process. So examining this not forbidden region of the parameter space in which the 3-to-2 process freezes out last. And so the thermal history of Kinder will go through three kind of distinct events. The first event being the kinetic decoupling of the two sectors. And this happens when the rate at which, this happens when the A prime standard model decays can no longer transfer energy at an efficient rate to keep the two sectors thermally coupled. And this happens while the 3-to-2 and 2-to-2 processes are still active and together maintaining chemical equilibrium in the dark sector and maintaining it at zero chemical potential. And so we'll see that after kinetic decoupling, the dark sector enters a period of cannibalization, like the one that we saw in the context of Elder. And then the second event to occur will be the freeze out of this 2-2 process. And this happens while the 3-2 process is still active. We'll see that the dark sector gains a non-zero chemical potential during this period, and that nevertheless, this cannibalization period continues at, even in the face of this non-zero chemical potential after the freeze out of this 2-2 process. And so this constitutes an extension of the conventional cannibalization scenario that occurs in Kinder. And then the last event to occur will be the freeze out of this 3-2 process. And this signals the freeze out of the dark matter. But we'll see that because the dark sector goes through this period of cannibalization from the time of kinetic decoupling through 2-2 freeze out and up until 3-2 freeze out, the relic density of the dark sector is nevertheless set by the kinetic decoupling process. So that's this Kinder scenario. Yeah, so this is a pretty dense slide, but I'll unfold each of these events kind of one by one in the slides that follow. Yeah, so let's jump into this thermal history. So we're examining the thermal history for a specific case in which the mass of A prime is 1.8 times the chi mass. So now I've introduced this parameter R, which is defined as the ratio of masses MA prime to M chi. And let's also look at the specific case for which the dark matter mass M chi is 10 MeV, so for light dark matter. And in the top panel, what I'm showing is the abundance of the dark matter chi plotted as a blue line and plotted as a function of this quantity X, which is defined as the dark matter mass divided by the standard model temperature. So as the universe expands and cools, this quantity X increases. And in the bottom panel, I'm plotting the dark sector temperature T prime, plotted as a blue line, also plotted as a function of this quantity X. And for comparison, I'm also showing the standard model temperature T. And so at early times in what I'm calling thermodynamic phase A in these plots, all these processes shown at the right are proceeding at rates greater than Hubble. This A prime to standard model decay process is maintaining thermal equilibrium between the two sectors, and the combination of this 2-2 and 3-2 number changing processes are maintaining chemical equilibrium in the dark sector. And so at early times, the dark sector, the dark matter abundance is depleting according to its equilibrium distribution, which is shown as a green dashed line in this top panel. And you can see that the two sectors remain thermally coupled. And so this behavior continues up until the point at which the first event of Kinder occurs, which is the kinetic decoupling of the two sectors. And so I'm indicating this with a pink vertical dotted line in these thermal history plots. And the kinetic decoupling occurs through this A prime standard model decays. And it happens when the rate at which the A prime standard model decays can no longer transfer energy between the two sectors. It happens when the rate at which the A prime standard model decays transfers energy between the two sectors can no longer maintain thermal equilibrium between the two sectors. And so when this happens, the dark sector temperature T prime deviates from the standard model temperature. And you can see that, in these plots, T prime starts to deviate from the standard model temperature T. And likewise, you can see that the dark matter abundance deviates from its equilibrium distribution. You can also see that after kinetic
decoupling. I think those plots answer the question in the beginning. The sector is one of the questions. I think the sector is in thermal equilibrium with the standard model. Chemical equilibrium as well. So this process just changes the way freeze out happens. This whole 3-2 process, cannibalism and whatnot. Sorry about that.
Well, I mean, I do want to point out, like in this case, it's a bit different because the process that controls the thermal coupling of the two sectors, like also contributes to, there's also a number changing process among dark sector and standard model particles.
That's chemical equilibrium.
That's not the same. So in the Elder case, the thermal decoupling happens through the elastic scattering, which doesn't change the number of.
Yeah, this is the confusing part, actually. Let's come back because there's some part that's missing there. I think, Yeah, at least here, though, there is chemical equilibrium. With
here there's chemical equilibrium.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. In the case of Elder, I didn't. Yeah, to be honest, this isn't a question I've thought about carefully. So that's why I'm. That's why I'd like to go back and think. Yeah, that's why.
Okay.
In this case, yeah, at early times, both thermal and chemical equilibrium hold between the two sectors.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Right, and so you can see that after kinetic decoupling, the dark sector temperature also evolves very slowly compared to the standard model temperature. And likewise, the dark matter abundance evolves very slowly compared to its equilibrium distribution. And that's because kinetic decoupling happens while the 2-to-2 and 3-to-2 number changing processes are still active, and they're net converting mass to kinetic energy in the dark sector, which is now thermally secluded. So they're heating it up in a process of cannibalization, like the one that we saw in the context of Elder. So now let's think about cannibalization again in the context of Kinder now. So again, cannibalization occurs after kinetic decoupling while the two sectors are thermally secluded. And since they're thermally secluded, they can no longer transfer entropy between each other, and the dark sector evolves with the constant co-moving entropy density. And again, at the same time, the 3-to-2 and 2-to-2 number changing processes are proceeding at rates greater than Hubble. They maintain chemical equilibrium in the dark sector and at zero chemical potential. And so both of these facts can be used to determine the relation among the dark sector temperature T prime and the standard model temperature T during cannibalization. You find that T prime scales logarithmically with the standard model temperature and is mostly fixed by the kinetic decoupling temperature TD. And so T prime again scales like log T during cannibalization. And so this first phase of cannibalization that we see in Kinder is the conventional case that we saw also occurs in the case of Elder. And now the second event to occur in this Kinder scenario is the freeze out of this 2-to-2 process. And so this happens when the rate of the 2-to-2 process falls below the Hubble expansion rate. And when this happens, the 2-to-2 process falls out of equilibrium such that there's no longer a detailed balance being maintained between its forward and reverse processes. And at the same time, the 3-to-2 process is still in equilibrium, proceeding at a rate greater than Hubble and maintaining detailed balance between its forward and reverse processes. And so now you have a single detailed balance relation being maintained among two chemical species. And so during this period, the dark sector gains a non-zero chemical potential supported by this 3-to-2 process. But nevertheless, even in the face of this non-zero chemical potential, cannibalization of the dark sector continues after the freeze out of the 2-to-2 process. And so T prime continues to scale logarithmically with the standard model temperature, with a slightly modified relation. And so this constitutes, so the second phase of cannibalization, the Kinder scenario, constitutes an extension of the conventional scenario, of the conventional case of cannibalization, which here occurs even in the face of a non-zero chemical potential and being supported solely by this 3-to-2 process, which is now among two chemical species of dark sector particles. And this is important because returning to these thermal history plots, when finally the 3-to-2 process freezes out, which I'm indicating by a purple vertical dotted line in these thermal history plots, And this signals the freeze out of the dark matter. Because cannibalization has been occurring in the dark sector from the time of kinetic decoupling, during which the dark sector temperature T prime scales logarithmically with the standard model temperature, and likewise during which the dark matter abundance evolves very slowly, this leads to the scenario in which the relic density of the dark matter is mostly set by its value at kinetic decoupling. And so that's this Kinder scenario. And again, we can see this explicitly by directly calculating the relic density. It's given by this equation. Again, in particular, it scales exponentially with the inverse dark sector temperature. It frees out TF prime, as this purple arrow indicates. But because freeze out occurs at the end of a period of cannibalization, which proceeds from the time of kinetic decoupling through the freeze out of the 2-to-2 process and up until the freeze out of the 3-to-2 process, and during which the dark sector temperature T prime scales logarithmically with the standard model temperature and is mostly fixed by the kinetic decoupling temperature TD. This leads to the scenario in which the relic density is exponentially sensitive to the kinetic decoupling temperature and has only subleading logarithmic dependence on the standard model temperature during cannibalization. And so this leads to this, so here we directly see this kinetically decoupling relic scenario. Okay, now that we've
seen— Can I ask something?
Patrick,
during your cannibal phase, is Hubble always dominated by the standard model?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so even though the dark sector only decreases logarithmically, you never get to the point where they are comparable.
No, you don't. The dark sector constitutes such a small number of degrees of freedom to the total bath that, yeah, in comparison to the standard model bath, that they're never comparable. At least in our calculations. I haven't thought about how long cannibalization would have to occur to make those comparable. But in any case, I think you would hit warm dark matter constraints before you were worried about that.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now that we've examined the thermal history of a specific realization of Kinder, let's identify the generic regime of parameter space in this model in which Kinder occurs. So what I'm showing here is generated over data from many solutions like the one whose thermal history we just examined, and what I'm showing are lines of constant relic density matched to the observed value, where each contour line is also for a fixed dark matter mass m chi. So that's a really packed sentence, so I'll say it again. So each of these contour lines that I'm plotting are for fixed relic density matched to the observed value, and each contour line also represents a fixed dark matter mass m chi. And the masses run from 1 MeV to 1 GeV in logarithmic steps, going from lowest to highest epsilon at the right, as indicated in the right-hand kind of edge of the plot here. And this is being plotted in the space of the kinetic mixing parameter epsilon versus the dark sector coupling alpha. And so in light of the thermal history we just examined, we can think of the y-axis epsilon as parameterizing the strength of the process controlling the kinetic coupling of the two sectors, the thermal coupling. And we could think of the x-axis alpha as parameterizing the strength of number changing processes in the dark sector, which in this region of the parameter space for R1.8 is dominated by this 3-2 process. So in particular, we can think of the x-axis as parameterizing the strength of this 3-2 process. And the solution whose thermal history we just examined sits where this pink star sits in this plot. Here in this Kinder region, which is shaded in light pink. And so you could see that in the Kinder region, lines of constant relic density go flat flow horizontally along the x-axis, independently of the strength of the dark sector coupling. And they stack up along the y-axis, and so they're controlled by the strength of the kinetic mixing parameter. They're controlled by the strength of the process controlling the kinetic coupling of the two sectors. So this is precisely this Kinder region where the two sectors thermally decouple, and the relic density is controlled by the strength of the process controlling the kinetic decoupling of the two sectors, which for the majority of this region is controlled by the a prime to standard model decays. And so you can see here that Kinder is a generic kind of region in this dark photon model. And you can also see where Kinder lies in relation to other freeze-out mechanisms in this dark photon model. Because as lines of constant relic density go up towards higher values of epsilon, then you start to enter the region where the two sectors do remain thermally coupled during the freeze-out process, throughout the freeze-out process. So you start to enter this not forbidden dark matter or NFDM regime that was previously studied where the relic density is controlled by the strength of these 3-2 by the strength of this 3-2 process, and the two sectors remain thermally coupled. So here lines of constant relic density flow vertically along the y-axis, so they're independently of the strength of the process controlling the kinetic coupling of the two sectors, and they stack up along the x-axis. So they're controlled by the strength of this 3-to-2 number changing process.
Can I ask you a simple question? I see that you push alpha d even to relatively large values, like 100 or so.
Yeah, like, that shouldn't be like taken seriously. I just plotted it out this far to kind of, I guess, open up, yeah, to indicate this region in principle.
Okay, but so we should morally stop at 1 or so, right? You don't want to push it to the
limit. Yeah, 1 or 4 pi should be where we stop.
Okay, I had the same question that we did.
Past 4 pi, we shouldn't take any of these results here seriously. I more or less just opened it up this far because I didn't have anywhere else to put these mass labels. but yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Right, and then as we go to even higher values of epsilon, we enter the WIMP region where it's the kinetizations of the standard model that control the relic density of the dark matter. And so since the kinetizations of the standard model are controlled by the combination of parameters epsilon squared times alpha, then here lines of constant relic density trace lines of constant epsilon squared times alpha. And so that's this WIMP region. And so, yeah, so this is pretty cool because you can see here that Kinder is a generic regime in this dark photon model. And you can also see where it lies in relation to other regimes in this model that represent distinct freeze-out mechanisms that were previously studied, like the NFDM and the conventional WIMP. Right, and so far I've focused the discussion on the region of the parameter space in which R is greater than 1.5, and where the mass of A prime is greater than 1.5 times M chi. And so this is the region of the parameter space in which is the 3-to-2 process that freezes out last after the 2-to-2 process. And so I'm reproducing these results here in the left-hand panel. And here in the right-hand panel, I'm showing the same kinds of results for the region of parameter space where R is less than 1.5, taking the representative case R1.4. And so this is the region, this is the so-called forbidden region of the parameter space where it's the 2-to-2 process that freezes out after the 3-to-2 process. And here you can see that there's 4 distinct freeze-out regimes, which I've labeled 1, 2, 3, and 4. And among these, the only one that was previously studied is regime 1. So regime 1 represents this forbidden dark matter scenario where, as I described earlier in the talk, the two sectors remain thermally coupled and the freeze out of the dark matter is, the relic density of the dark matter is determined by the 2-to-2 process. But you can see that there's, by relaxing the assumption of thermal equilibrium, there's now 3 distinct freeze out regimes in addition to regime 1, 2, 3, and 4. And so I won't go into detail about these regimes like I did Kinder. I'll just say that regime 4 represents a kind of another realization of Kinder-like behavior. And that in all these regimes, the kind of the non-trivial separate evolution of the dark sector temperature plays an important role in determining the relic density of the dark matter. And so you can see that, the main lesson I wanted to show all of these distinct freeze-out regimes of vector portal dark matter at once and state what I think is an interesting lesson, which is that we've really done here is really fully carefully explored an already well studied hidden sector model, the vector portal dark matter model, and we found a rich set of new freeze out mechanisms that can generate light dark matter. And so I think it's important even to really carefully examine even well understood hidden sector models for potential new freeze-out mechanisms that can give rise to dark matter at interesting scales that might be able to motivate future experiments. Right, and so now that I've shown kind of all of the full parameter space of this dark photon model, and highlighted all of its distinct freeze-out regimes, you know, a few of which are new. I want to look at the experimental constraints on these distinct regimes. And so what I'm showing here is data matched to the relic abundance of dark matter against the relevant experimental constraints plotted in the space of kinetic mixing parameter epsilon versus the dark matter mass m chi. And in the left-hand panel, I'm showing the results for R1.8. And in the right-hand panel, I'm showing the results for R1.4. And the distinct freeze-out regimes that I highlighted in the previous slide are indicated in blue, and they're separated by these blue lines. So we have so again, the new regimes are Kinder and regimes 2, 3, and 4. And this kind of darker gray region I'm showing is everything below everything in this gray region is where the model becomes non-perturbative. So for alpha greater than 4 pi, and this light blue region I'm showing are the direct detection constraints. The purple region I'm showing are constraints from supernova cooling that particle production and escape in this model have. The red region is showing constraints on the self interactions among dark matter particles, and the green region is showing CMB constraints on the annihilations of dark matter to standard model particles, and this light gray region shown here is our lab like accelerator and beam dump constraints. And so the Kinder region that I just described, you can see has a very kind of tiny available window in this against these constraints. But in general, the Kinder in this model implies large self-interaction rates and a large S-wave annihilation signal in CMB. I'll say some things in a future slide to make this kind of like less alarming. To relax some of these constraints. But in this realization, Kinder runs into pretty large self-interaction and CMB constraints. And among these new freeze-out regimes, the kind of largest available window is for regimes 2 and 3. And so for regimes 2 and 3, there's kind of an available window where experiments have not yet explored that might be able to motivate future experiments searching for light dark matter. Yeah, so now let me say something quick as a way to alleviate these CMB and self-interaction constraints for Kinder. So I just want to give a brief slide to this, because this is work that we're kind of currently working on and should report on soon. But so there's a slight modification we can make to this model that will leave the early time kind of cosmology mostly unchanged, and so leave like this Kinder story unchanged, but that will modify the late time physics so as to alleviate the CMB and self interaction constraints. So imagine that instead of the model that I just described, the dark matter is a pseudo drag fermion charged under the hidden U1, and at low energies when the hidden U1 is broken, splits into two non-degenerate Majorana fermions, the chi1 and chi2. And so long as the mass splitting between chi1 and chi2 is smaller than the smallest dark sector freeze-out temperature you consider, then you can make this modification and leave this kind of Kinder cosmology throughout freeze-out unchanged. But now the vector coupling between chi's and A primes is off diagonal, consistent with the Majorana fermions not carrying a conserved charge. And so the processes that you write, which contribute to self-interaction and CMB constraints, now at leading order occur at one loop. So here's like chi1 annihilations, or chi1 scattering into chi1s, and chi1s annihilating into T plus T minus. And you could see that these now occur at one loop. And you could also write, for example, interactions between chi1 and chi2, but these likewise run into a large Boltzmann suppression at lead times. And so this is a way that you can really drastically alleviate these CMB and self-interaction constraints and leave this whole Kinder story unchanged. So open up a lot of the parameter space for this Kinder mechanism that I've described. Okay, so let me show my conclusions now. So what I've done is really carefully explored an already well-studied hidden sector model, the vector portal dark matter model, and fully characterize all the thermal freeze-out histories that can occur in the kind of region of the mass range of this model that we considered. And in doing so, we found a rich set of novel pathways to the relic abundance of vector portal dark matter that can naturally give rise to light dark matter. Among these, I highlighted in a bit of detail, concretely, this kinetically decoupling relic scenario where the relic density is set by the kinetic decoupling of the dark and standard model sectors. We saw that Kinder implies large self-interaction rates. Kinder in this realization implies large self-interaction rates and a large S-wave annihilation signal in the CMB. But I also quickly visited a way that we can, you know, alleviate some of these, alleviate these CMB and self-interaction constraints. And even in this realization, some of these novel pathways provide, in particular these regimes 2 and 3, provide new viable target regions for future experiments searching for light dark matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Okay, we can take more questions.
Can I ask you to go back to the, so before you consider the non-degenerate Majorana fermions, you were showing the parameter space. There, it was opening up a bit for a mass ratio closer, like 1.4, okay.
Yeah.
So if you go say below 1.5 or so, then you start to have a more appreciable region of parameter space, which is open.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I guess for R greater than 1.5, the way I would say it is, because actually, in fact, like the original NFDM mechanism didn't leave much parameter space open either. So that also ran into pretty large like self-interaction and CMB constraints. But I guess what I would say by it is that, in relation to these constraints for R greater than 1.5 is that by relaxing the assumption of thermal equilibrium, we then see that like this original NFDM mechanism is fully rolled out and kind of, it's like the available window that was originally in the NFDM parameter space gets moved to, you find that it's actually represented by this Kinder mechanism.
Okay.
So that's how I would summarize like what relaxing the assumption of thermal equilibrium did for the constraints for R greater than 1.5. And then in the case of R less than 1.5, like none of these, earlier results below epsilon of 10 to the minus 5 were basically just unrealistic. Because, earlier results kind of assumed thermal equilibrium all the way down. I can't quite remember exactly down to what value of epsilon, like this NFDM results, or the FDM results went down to, but well into this part of the parameter space, which you now see is represented by other freeze-out mechanisms that have some totally different parameter dependence than the original forbidden dark matter kind of framework. So these experimental constraints are basically just totally updated in comparison to the previous results in this space.
So if there are no more questions, we can thank Patrick again. Thank you.